Good afternoon and welcome to the City View podcast. I'm Andy Sylvester, editor here at City AM. In a minute, I'll be joined by Chris Jackson, the founder and CEO of Protium, Britain's leading green hydrogen firm. We'll talk about how businesses can benefit from new green technologies, as well as what recent events in Ukraine are telling us about the need for energy independence. First, the corporate headlines, though, with help from our friends over at PA. And we'll start with Pearson, the education publisher. The private equity giant Apollo has dropped its takeover pursuit of the publisher after the company rejected a third bid to buy the firm. The London-listed company saw its shares slump after Pearson turned down the £7.2 billion approach. Bosses said the move significantly undervalued the company and its future prospects, and the turnaround led by CEO Andy Bird does seem to be paying off. Apollo had said the offer would be its final, and under UK takeover rules, it must now walk away from bidding for at least the next 6 months. Germany has triggered emergency plans to manage gas supplies following the Kremlin's demand for contracts to be forthcomingly paid in rubles. That's raised the prospect of power rationing in Europe's largest economy if Russia further reduces gas flows into Germany. The German economy minister, Robert Habeck, has activated what he called the early warning phase of an existing emergency plan. That means that a crisis team from the economics ministry, the regulator and the private sector will monitor domestic imports and storage. And if supplies fall short, Germany's network regulator does have the power to ration gas supplies, with industry being first in line for cuts. TUI passenger levels have grown to around 80% of 2019 levels as bookings remain almost unaffected by the war in Ukraine, the company said today. Overall, summer bookings went up by 2.1 million since February, while in the UK, demand has grown by about 14% on pre-COVID levels. Nordic countries and Poland, though, registered subdued levels of activity since the war's outbreak. We're on course and the trends are intact, said Chief Executive Fritz Jossen. People want to travel, we see the demand in bookings and expect a good summer 22. The firm also announced it would begin paying back its credit lines from the German government. It was bailed out on three separate occasions. And sticking with transport, Transport Secretary here, Grant Shapps, has urged the government regulator to disqualify P&O Ferries chief exec Peter Hebblethwaite on the basis he is, quote, unfit to lead a British company, unquote. The cabinet minister said he'd written to the insolvency service conveying his firm belief that Hebblethwaite should no longer be in charge of the under-fire ferry operator. There's all sorts of jibbery-pokery going on at P&O Ferries to this day. P&O Ferries this morning accusing the maritime regulator of being unduly rigorous in its safety procedures, which has seen two ships detained, while Shapps continues to say that the company should rehire the 800 staff it let go rather unceremoniously just under a fortnight ago. One that's going to run and run, no doubt. Elsewhere, publisher Bloomsbury is enjoying a welcome boost from the recent blockbuster Crescent City novel. Usain Bolt has joined the management team of an esports fan company, and IKEA has announced plans to shut its Tottenham Hale store as it continues to focus on smaller but more numerous stores. The meatballs will have to live long only in our memories. It's now my pleasure to welcome Chris Jackson, the CEO and co-founder of Protium, a company that's bringing green hydrogen to businesses. Chris is sickeningly young and sickeningly bright, and it's companies like Protium that, in my mind at least, will be at the forefront of the reality of getting the world towards net zero. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And I think we were talking off air before we pressed the record button about, you know, the fact that everybody talks about hydrogen as being a part of our energy future, and it undeniably is. But perhaps there's a bit of sort of lack of understanding of why that might be the case. So why don't we just start with what it is that that you guys are doing and why it's so exciting about bringing renewables kind of into the business world quickly, easily, and at a cost that companies can bear?
Sure. No, and I think you're right to point out this is definitely an area of interest, but perhaps a bit of a low knowledge base. So happy to help and be on the show. So Protium is a UK-based green hydrogen energy company. We build dedicated renewable energy infrastructure for businesses that are looking to decarbonize, and we try and build a holistic offering. So we try and decarbonize clients' heat, power, and transportation requirements through dedicated combinations of solar, wind, battery, and green hydrogen production, predominantly through a process called electrolysis, where you split water into hydrogen oxygen. And essentially, the way I try and help explain hydrogen or green hydrogen to people is to say, we already use hydrogen in our energy system today. The problem is that it's usually associated with carbon too. If you think about coal or natural gas or diesel, they are all hydrogen-based fuels. It's just the carbon associated with it that is the externality or the problem that we're trying to deal with. So we're really trying to rebuild fundamentally the way that we use energy to make sure it's sustainable, but also delivers better value for clients.
Yeah, and you've certainly got an interesting client list that's been growing over the past year. Why don't you just sort of catch us up on the past year? Because there's obviously exciting developments in Teesside, but there's also partnerships in Wales with really big corporates, amongst others.
Sure. So Protium announced a project alongside the Prime Minister's 10 billion of new green investments before the COP climate event last year. We're working in partnership with Budweiser UK to decarbonize their Magill brewery. It's the UK's joint largest brewery, based just off the M4, 58 acre industrial estate. So that's a really exciting project where we're essentially developing a mixture of renewables and green hydrogen production to decarbonize heat from the brewery, as well as power and some of the heavy good vehicles that operate at the site. So that's really exciting. That's a key part of helping Budweiser to get to net zero by 2026 at that brewery. And, you know, obviously Budweiser has been a pioneer in a number of areas. You might've seen little zero carbon or 100% renewable electricity battery logos on their cans of Budweiser. So we're excited to be able to help them do that. We also, as you mentioned, announced a project working with Quorn in Teesside, you know, another business looking at trying to be net zero by 2030. So we're proud to support them. And other projects that have been listed that are probably worth flagging is with the Brookladdock Whiskey Distillery up in Islay, part of the Remy Quantro family, and with Loganair and Zeravia as part of the government's funded Future Flight project. So looking at how we can deliver 19-seater zero-carbon flight between initially Glasgow and Inverness.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll come back to why those companies have all signed up in a minute, but why don't you take us back to the origin story here? Because as I understand it, it was an idea that began out of work you were doing at the World Bank.
So there's various different takes on this story.
well, you're the man who should know.
Which is that, well, I know it depends how far back you want to go. But so actually today I'm sitting in Bologna at the site Johns Hopkins University. And it was here really where I did my first paper on hydrogen with my then professor, Marco Dell'Aquila, my now business partner, Marco, who's the chief investment officer at Protium. So in some ways, that's kind of, I guess, the seed of this. It was the two of us that sort of put the business together in July, August 2019. But you're right to say that it was really during my time at the World Bank where I think the idea of hydrogen sort of came to the fore in a very pronounced way. I think it's very hard for people to understand, but actually, we often treat electricity and energy as the same thing, and they're very fundamentally different in terms of scale. Electricity or power is only 20% of all the energy we consume in the world. And the other 80% is essentially for heat and transport. And that's predominantly fuel-based. And so when we talk about decarbonization, it's a massively harder step than many people really appreciate. And sitting at that kind of 30,000 feet view from the World Bank, I realized quite how far behind everyone was and started trying to figure out, well, what technologies are actually commercially available today that could actually help to address some of those challenges. And hydrogen just kept coming back as the key way to do that. And I'm not an engineer by background, but I do have the ability to pull together a consortium of very bright, capable people, which is what I've been really privileged to be able to do at Protium, and to try and actually deliver commercial technology solutions in a sort of simplified framework for businesses, because that's how we're going to make net zero happen. We're going to have to find a way to take all this complexity and make not just the technology side of it, but also the commercial and contracting side of it simple enough that actually ordinary businesses, and not just the biggest, largest businesses in the world, can engage with it, and ultimately retail consumers as well.
You've stolen the next question out of my mouth, which was about how you get to that point where, you know, companies that are not of a certain scale, of a certain size, who can't necessarily, or don't feel, let's say, rather than can't, but don't feel they can put the resources behind this and think, well, we'll do it down the line. Your role presumably is to come in and say, actually, this can be an awful lot simpler than you think.
So I think that is our role. And I think what we also need to be able to do as part of that is to be able to kind of help bring some of the investors on that journey with us as well. And that's something we've been spending quite a bit of time doing too, because in some senses, the issues now around net zero, and I think maybe this is the thing the public find quite hard and policymakers sometimes find quite hard, is the challenge is really not so much about the technology. We have the technologies today that could get us to a net zero future by 2050. It's not perfect by any means, but they do exist. The question is, how do we, what are the trade-offs that we're willing to accept in terms of, you know, the land that we're willing to use, the type of safety regulations and permits that we require for people putting in new infrastructure, what kind of financial risk are people willing to take over what time period? These are the challenges that actually are really crucial to resolve. And the markets are getting better. Energy as a service, something that really has come to the fore a lot more. And I think we owe the tech world probably a thank you for software as a service and mobility as a service and all these things. But, you know, I think that's helping in our model. We call AHESCO, or hydrogen as an energy service company approach, is kind of playing on that theme, is precisely to try and take away this stress of, if you're a mid-sized business, you know, how do you fund all the CapEx that you require to get your energy system to zero emissions? Well, you probably can't. And even if you could afford the CapEx, is it appropriate for your business to be using so much of your balance sheet to fund those assets and taking the technology risk? Our answer is no. Investors also would like to find a way to support these types of businesses to decarbonize. And they're looking for businesses and operators that can provide them with the comfort that they can use that. And I think the crucial bit, which hydrogen is probably a little bit different for, is that you're now dealing with an energy vector, and importantly, not a source of energy, we can come back to that, but an energy vector that has versatility. So in the past, if you build a solar or wind site linked to a customer and they go bankrupt, if you don't have a grid connection, it was quite a challenge to get people comfortable with that risk. But when you're producing a fuel, there are means of then distributing that fuel to other customers, and that, we believe, starts to fundamentally de-risk the attitude of investors towards supporting decarbonization of these types of businesses. And if we don't do that, we're not going to decarbonize.
You mentioned policymakers there and the compromises that they will have to make. You could argue that politicians are not necessarily built for compromise in our modern political system. What is it, do you think companies like yourselves and technology like you're developing will make those discussions easier? It will make solutions easier, I suppose, because we've all spent an awful lot of time over the past month, for reasons that are blindingly obvious, talking about energy independence, talking about the energy mix, talking about powering the life that we want to live here, without relying on old dirty sources of energy from parts of the world that perhaps we might not want to associate with anymore. Do companies like you, investors that are backing you, do they make that transition easier?
Well, I think we do. I mean, I think the key thing to remember is that I think because energy operates across such a long time frame, it's quite challenging sometimes for policymakers to be incentivized and, frankly, to understand quite how long the tail is of the decisions they make. So, you know, if you look at waves of big investment in energy and energy efficiency, they've always followed crisis moments in the energy market. So some of the most profound energy efficiency measures all came out of the last oil shock, you know, from the 1970s. So there is kind of something inevitable about these moments being very important transition periods for energy systems. And I'm sure many can see already that, you know, people are actually realizing today that the most expensive form of energy is the energy you can't get hold of when you need it.
Yeah.
And so actually, you know, for as much as people have said, oh, it's really cheap to have natural gas, I think there is a, you know, or to use diesel or petrol, I think there is a bit more of a recognition that actually it's some of the savings people may have made over the last 10 years by staying with natural gas unhedged, many of them will have lost all of those saving benefits in the last few months. So that is actually shifting perceptions quite fundamentally around energy, which is good for businesses like ours. And I think there is probably a broader piece for policymakers here too around jobs, because I think the transition is not simply going to be delivered by essentially investors investing in assets where there's no job association with that and there's no local benefit associated with that. I think that is probably the next big step that, to be honest, the industry needs to do more on, but also government needs to help industry with, which is to say, you know, if we cannot demonstrate that the new generation of energy technologies are creating long-term jobs that are also creating local economic opportunities for people that will have solar farms and wind farms, hydrogen sites, large battery facilities, offshore wind, you know, these types of assets being put in place, if we can't demonstrate what that does and what that means for people, we're not going to have the buy-in we require from countries, you know, like the UK to frankly deliver on the transition. We'll see this in London, right? I mean, how many people are willing to have massive disruption of streets being ripped up, to have new cabling put in so that people can have, you know, less gas and more electric, or we can have more electric buses instead of using diesel buses. People may all want to go that direction, but people have to see the benefits behind all of that disruption and all of the additional cost that comes with it. That's something that I think, you know, is hard for policymakers, but I think companies like ours are trying to do that by taking a more holistic view, by bringing together customers, by bringing together local communities, bringing together expertise, and trying to bring investors in as well. And that ultimately is going to be the key to making sure that these investments go ahead.
Yeah, it does seem the way that improving the way that story is told will be a key part of people wanting to pick up the book, to stretch this horrendous metaphor. Chris, it's a pleasure speaking to you. It sounds really exciting what Protium are doing, and I'm sure we'll hear more from you in the future.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time.
And that's all from us at the City View today. I will be back tomorrow. From me now, goodbye.